This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Long before Frank Langella, Anne Rice, the Twilight movies, and True Blood, vampires were not such gorgeous beings. Back in 1922, the German expressionist filmmaker F.W. Murnau concocted a ghastly monster with pointed ears, bushy eyebrows, long claws, and rodent-like fangs in the film Nosferatu. Nosferatu is the first surviving vampire movie to be made. As of this year, it remains Rotten Tomatoes' best horror movie of all time and is one of several scary silent films playing in the area this Halloween season with musical accompaniment by Jeff Rapsis. Jeff is co-owner of the Hippo Weekly newspaper and author of the Silent Film Music Blog and is playing for us now. Jeff, great to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for playing. What can you tell us about this film, Nosferatu, from 1922, adapted, apparently unbidden, from Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Yes, there were legal challenges, even in the silent film era, copyright disputes and other things. In fact, this was a pioneering film in that respect because it was one of the first films in which the people from the estate of Bram Stoker, the author, were able to successfully get a judgment against the filmmakers who had basically ripped them off, changed all the names. That's why it's not Dracula, it's Nosferatu. They just changed all the names and thought that would be enough to be able to use the material. It wasn't done out of malice. They just didn't want to get permission, I guess. And as part of the judgment against them, all the prints of the film that had been made were supposed to be recalled and destroyed.
Well, now, after all these movies that we see now with special effects, you know, spurting arteries and that kind of thing, it's still really creepy.
I think it's even more creepy now than it might have been in some ways because silent film, which used to be, you know, it wasn't silent film when it was new. It was the movies. Nobody thought they were missing anything. But now, now that we have film and cinema that has everything, to go back to an era where we've got a very limited toolkit to tell a story, just the visuals and music to go along with it, it creates a whole nother level of emotions that we're not used to. So it seems otherworldly and creepy in a way that makes all the great silent horror films really great for Halloween nowadays. If people want to dip their toe into the silent film ocean, Halloween is the time when that happens a lot.
Well, apparently only part of the original score for this film actually remains. But you don't use a score. You improvise all of these?
One of the things about silent film is that the music was different in every place that it was shown. And it was actually the exception rather than the rule for any music to be created for a film, whether it was from Hollywood or in Germany, which is where Nosferatu was made. And it was very much a local enterprise. Theaters would hire their own musicians, and oftentimes you get the cliche of grandma playing a single piano to keep up with the film, but it wasn't like that at all. Even in the smaller film theaters, you'd have a group of musicians who would work together, and they might know 50 or 60 cues of all different types. So you could have music for a love scene, and I can pull that up here. You'd have like a... So they might know something like that. But then, you know, here comes the guy on the horse. And they would launch into that, and they had their own vocabulary of music to go with whatever happened to come into the theater. This happened all around the country, all around the world. Later, theater organs were developed so that instead of having to employ a huge orchestra, A theater owner could just have one person playing a massive theater organ and really have the same effect. That became the real soundtrack of
Yeah, we associate it with organs, especially scary movies.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, that has always been one of the things that people expect from it. And with Nosferatu, you know, you don't want to disappoint them, and so I do a lot of organ stuff with it, but not just organ stuff. With that film, with Nosferatu, you can do a lot of things that may not have been going on back in the silent film era, but since scoring of films has come a long way, and so I draw from some of the vocabulary that's developed since then. So there's Bernard Herrmann in Psycho, for instance. So So a string texture like that can really be effective, even though that might not have been used back in 1922 when this film was first released. And I improvise in real time, and it always comes out different with me. It depends on the audience, it depends on the theater, it depends on what I had for dinner that night, and, you know, whether the dog got loose today. but it always makes for a different performance no matter what. Which is part of the reason these films, not just the horror films, but all the films, I think, still have a lot of life in them, because they can be different and adapted to a modern sensibility to reach across the decades and now almost a century since these films were brand new in theaters.
How do you choose the films, or do you actually choose the films that you play for?
I do a lot of screenings all around New England, and in some places I get requests for certain popular titles, such as The Phantom of the Opera. What I really like to do, though, is to work with venues to find films that don't have a large audience, that are not part of the acknowledged list of classics, like Birth of a Nation mm-hmm. or some of the Buster Keaton features and things that people, you know even today as great films, and instead find films that are just as powerful with an audience, if you can put them in front of an audience on a big screen with live music, but have just somehow fallen by the wayside. And there are dozens and dozens of them that really do spring to life if you can recreate the conditions that silent film is supposed to be shown under. And you can see these films now on YouTube or on your cell phone or on home video, but you're missing part of the experience if you don't go to the trouble of trying to stage them the way their creators intended for them to be shown, which is on a big screen with live music and in a theater with an audience.
Well, let's hear a little bit more of your conception of Nosferatu.
The thing about the vampire movie is that he has powers that go beyond normal human beings. And we don't really know what they are at first. And this is a time when people didn't know the whole vampire cliche that, like we do. And so I have a chord structure that I sort of underlie all the improv with, which starts with a minor chord like this. And then it evolves to sort of a grand major chord with a bass line that goes up. Hear that? And so you can use that underneath a lot of things. And you can shift it around into different parts of the keyboard and put different harmonies under it. And if you stick with that, it makes everything fit together in a way that sounds like you had to have planned that out, but I don't. It's just that I'm using just a few building blocks. There it is down below there. And you can add some repeated notes into it. And you can wind things up with kind of a grand cadence. Something else is happening. That's way down below there. You can get to a place where things are really strange, very open harmony. There's no harmony really there except the fifth of the chord. And then we can sneak in our little signature melody. And it gets even more creepier depending on, you know, what other notes you fill in and where you go in the bass. Let's keep it climbing, going up. And now let's make it in the bass where we get back to the melody again. And we're ready for whatever happens next.
It strikes me that you're responding very much to what's going on now, the live audience, the experience of the film being screened. But you, Jeff, are also communing with the dead on some level. I mean, you have a dialogue in some way with Buster Keaton and Mary Pickford and Lon Chaney.
Yes, it's true that I collaborate with dead people. I've tried collaborating with the other kind, and it doesn't always work as well. I try to respect what they were trying to achieve. It's not about the music. This is not a forum for me to play wonderful music and everybody go, oh, isn't that nice? What I try to do is to get to the essence of what the people creating the film were trying to do, what kind of emotions they were trying to evoke in people, and what kind of narrative arc they were constructing, and try and come up with music that supports all of that. One of the best compliments I can get and I'm glad to say I hear it quite often, is that I forgot you were sitting there playing music live. Because what I want to do is create an environment where people are so wrapped up in the film that they forget that the music is being created right there.
So you're a rare performer in that you wish to be become invisible.
Oh, I have a huge ego. That's why I'm here on the radio with you. But the essence of this is to disappear. Yes, it's when the lights go down, the movie is what should be first and foremost. For people who knew silent film and grew up watching it when it was new, when it was over and people moved on, nothing was more old-fashioned. It'd be like us, you know, we laugh when they blow up the disco records at the baseball park because who would ever want to hear disco again, right? And silent film was like the disco of the 1930s and 40s. No one would have ever taken it seriously. Many of the prints were just thrown out or melted for their chemicals. And it was only later when people came along who had not experienced it firsthand said, wait a minute, there's something of value here. And then the rush was on to try and recover what we could find. Turns out only about 20% of the films that were made during this part of cinema's history survived.
There's a big surge in popularity in the silent films being shown with live music. What do you think is behind that?
Well, I suppose there's many things. In my experience, I found that people are drawn to it because it's a collaborative and a collective experience. This is an age where increasingly we consume content on our own, through the internet and through social media. Even though social media brings us together in other ways, a large part of that interaction is spent on our own in front of a screen. And events like a silent film screening requires you to get out and be somewhere, and you're part of an event and a happening that, because of the way the music is done, is going to be a unique and special thing, and the audience is never going to be the same again either. And so we all collaborate in bringing what is just a can of celluloid on its own to life as a great achievement of cinema from the early couple of decades of the movies.
Well, Jeff Rapsis, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jeff accompanies Nosferatu at Red River Theaters in Concord on Friday, Phantom of the Opera at Levitt Theater in Agunquit, Maine on Saturday, and also at the Flying Monkey next Thursday. Also, there's a Lon Chaney Halloween Creep Fest featuring the Unholy Three from 1925 and West of Zanzibar at Wilton Town Hall Theater on Sunday, and The Cat and the Canary next Wednesday at Rogers Center for the Arts. That's at Merrimack College in Andover, Massachusetts. A busy, busy man. There's much more on the films and the schedule at the Silent Film Music Blog. You'll find a link at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Thanks so much for your listening time today, and we do invite you to share segments with your friends and to download the Word of Mouth podcast that's on iTunes. You can also get it on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Who doesn't remember how well creepy stories travel by word of mouth? I'm Virginia Prescott. Please come back for a compilation of some of our most popular stories. That's going to be this Sunday at noon, right here on New Hampshire Public Radio. That was really fun.